The following content is provided under a Creative Commons license. Your support will help MIT OpenCourseWare continue to offer high-quality educational resources for free. To make a donation or view additional materials from hundreds of MIT courses, visit MIT OpenCourseWare at ocw.mit.edu.
Some content in this video is not covered under our Creative Commons license. See the closing credits for more information.
All right, so really quick lecture. We just wanted to put down in writing and on screen some thoughts I think we've already given you about basically how to think about cutting features and streamlining your game down as we get closer and closer to the time that your game is due. And where did it go? There it is. All right. All right, so just as a review, at the end of each sprint, and actually, when do your sprints end? Are they all ending on the weekend? Are they ending on a Monday?
Sunday-ish.
Monday? And how about the other team?
Yeah,
Mondays? Okay. Okay, so at the end of your sprint, you look at your sprint task list, and you figure out, you know, what was completed, and did you reach your sprint goal, which we heard that you had goals, you had things you were working towards, which is great. You're looking at your product backlog and just figuring out how much is left to do and how much. But one thing you want to think about also is how much of everything else that's on your product backlog is actually needed for your game to be a deliverable game. Because at the end of development, there's always going to be some elements on the at the end of your product backlog. You're not going to complete everything that's in there. It never happens. So one thing to think about is, can you cut them right now? Can you focus your game on what it is right now rather than what it might be? Which is pretty key at this point in the development process, since we have just a few more weeks left of the semester, right? Plus some holidays coming up as well. And you want to focus your effort on crafting the core experience of your game. So what is it that the player is actually doing, seeing, and experiencing, rather than all the other, what they're supposed to be doing, what they're supposed to be seeing, what they're supposed to be experiencing, rather than everything else that it could be, if your game is still a little bit fuzzy around the edges. So when can you cut the feature? And of course you can cut it before it's implemented. It's on the bottom of your product backlog. You can just say, we're never going to do it. Assign it a priority of zero and just forget about it or filter it out in some form. And a really well-designed product backlog is designed to allow you to do just that. Usually, though, when you're looking at features to cut, you're stuck with them right now. They're in some kind of incomplete, ill-formed state. So while you're stuck with it, you need to either redesign the feature with a smaller scope or remove the feature and then figure out what you're going to do with that gap, with that feature not being in there anymore. It could be replacing it with a smaller one. You could be removing three features and replacing them all with just one smaller feature, which is basically a Band-Aid feature, basically. Repurposing a pre-existing feature you have, especially if it's feedback-oriented. How are we letting the user know what happened within the game? If you can already throw text on the screen, just do that rather than the cool sparkle effects for the particle engine you don't have installed yet. Or maybe there is no gap, so you just don't need to replace anything at all. So it formally happens between sprints, preferably at a sprint review, so right at the end of the sprint and not at a sprint planning. I guess remember, planning is when you start your sprint, your backlog's already aligned, you already know what you're going to do. In the planning session, you're figuring out what the goal for your sprint is, and you're selecting which backlog items need to be for that sprint. In a review, you're looking at what you've done, you're looking at your backlog, and then rewriting your backlog to better represent what the future of the game is going to be. You could try doing this during a sprint. I know last week people asked about what happens if you want to change things during a sprint. It's definitely not ideal. I think even last week we said just don't do it. Don't change your user stories during a sprint. But when it comes to cutting features, though, you might not know a feature needs to be cut until you've already started working on it. So really, don't do it, but if you do, take the time as a team to discuss it before cutting it. In a larger project or a longer project, especially a commercial project with an external client, what would normally happen at this point is you would end the sprint prematurely. Like maybe the sprint started on Monday. On Wednesday, you've already figured out that things are going really, really poorly. You just end the sprint on Wednesday, redo review, redo planning, rebring in your client, and talk everything through again, and then try again and do another new sprint. Sometimes it means throwing out all the work that happened Monday through Wednesday, which is fine, because if you're in a commercial project, it might be a two-week sprint. You're only throwing out 3 days of work instead of 2 weeks of work. So figuring out what to cut, you want to look at all your incomplete or not yet working features and answer these two questions for each of them. Is this feature a core experience in the game, and does it add to the core values of the game? And if it doesn't meet both of those requirements, it's likely a candidate to be cut. And if you haven't started work on a core feature, especially at this point, like evolution for your game, if you haven't really started working on it, is it really a core feature? Is it really something that is required for the game to be what the game is? Or is it something you just really, really like and want to work and want to have happen? Right now at this point, it might be a core feature. A week later, it may no longer be a core feature. But that's what you have your design documents, you have your previous prototypes working on. Hopefully you got some prototypes that are non-digital that are exploring that feature, so you can answer that question really easily. Yes, it is core, it just hasn't gone in yet, and that's okay. So to put it in a more pragmatic way, assume you have one more sprint before you're going to start polishing, which you kind of do. It's November 11th, you've got another sprint, another week, and then hopefully you're spending your last couple weeks of class polishing your game, refining features you already have, rather than adding new features in, hopefully. We don't expect it to happen for every team. We don't see it happen a lot in these classes, but that's kind of what we hope for you guys to do. At least polish most of it, if not all of it. But you want to look at your game and figure out what is still placeholder in your game. Your assets. Do you still have gray-boxed assets, programmer art assets? They don't look like they're going to look. Maybe that's something that might reflect that it needs to be cut. Features. Especially if you have a level-based game and you're saying, well, level 2 goes here, maybe level 2 just doesn't exist. And it goes 1 to 3. And then you have to redesign 1 and 3 to make sure that it's not just experience, gap, experience. It goes in a good curve. Or feedback, placeholder feedback. There's a button a player can do, an action a player can make. They have no clue that it did anything except for things going on behind the scenes in the system, and it's not really being exposed back to the player. For each of these things that you already have in your game, think about, are you going to polish this, or are you going to remove it? And when you're analyzing it, especially with assets, think about how much time it's going to take to turn the asset into something recognizable. And by recognizable, what I mean is that the player is going to recognize the function of that object. The player knows what that asset does. It knows that it's an enemy, that I need to kill it. It knows that it's an item that's on top of a desk, and I click on the item and not the desk, and I get a different thing for the item than I do if I clicked on the desk. For features, you just want to reestimate the feature and just decide, can you even complete it in time? Is it bigger than it was when you first did it? Hopefully, you've been reestimating your product backlogs as you've been going. You might not have been, and if you haven't been, try that at the end of this next sprint. Go through your old your not yet started backlog items and do a really quick reestimation. Is it still small? Is it actually really large, and we just haven't thought about it until almost too late? And then feedback. Think about what's the simplest way you can give the player very clear feedback about what they're doing. And it could be something as simple as, like I mentioned earlier, throwing text on the screen, changing the color of the sprite. If you already have particles, putting sparkles on it. Like, you clicked on it. Hey, I clicked on it. I know I clicked on it because the sparkles came. But the tricky thing with the feedback is that you might be creating new features. By answering that question and polishing it, you're actually creating new features more than likely. So you want to make sure that the features that you're creating are as small as they can be and are as reusable as they can be. Reuse all the systems you already have in your game as best you can. So when it comes to a feature you're stuck on right now, you've decided you're going to cut it. Analyze the following for the feature. Like, what are its dependencies? How complete are its dependencies? And what priority are the dependencies being worked on? A real problem when it comes to using a Scrum process for game development, dependencies tend to be buried within product backlog items much more frequently than maybe in like a spreadsheet software or some kind of commercial software. because there's just so many different things going on. There's so many different departments being used, art, sound, and everything. So what I mean by dependencies, and actually I'm really glad I heard on this from a number of you in your presentations just now. You've got people dependencies, right? We're waiting on someone to finish this task, and until they finish this task, we can't work on this other backlog item. So that's why it's stuck at the bottom. We just haven't been able to pull that thing up. Hopefully, you've got people who are working on other items, and not your entire game isn't stuck on that one thing. But that might very well get a feature stuck way at the bottom longer than it needs to be. Maybe it's a technology dependency. You've got some architecture you haven't put in your game yet, like BoxTD as you were describing. Maybe level saving, how you're going to save the state of your game. And it could be a design dependency. Can't have jump power-ups. Well, why would you have jump power-ups before you had jump? And hopefully those already were two product backlog items, but they might have got stuck together somehow. So hopefully, at least with the people one, there's one way of tackling it. Re-looking at who's working on what, making sure tasks get done in a better priority, reassigning your entire priorities. For technology, it's really just, do we need it to be as pretty as possible, as best as possible, or is it good enough for now? And for design, why not just get rid of the jump power-ups and just really try to get that jump looking really, really good and really, really perfect? It depends for your game. It's going to be different for each game. So I know somebody asked last week, when you have a user story, how do you rewrite the user stories to remove dependencies? I tried to give an answer. I thought about it a little bit more, and I found a really good example online. So say we've got two product backlog items that, as a user, I want to write a text message, and as a user, I want to write an email message. There's a technical dependency that's hidden in there that they weren't aware of before, that as a user, they wanted to enter text. It's like some common functionality there. Create the new product backlog item, re-estimate it. Those two items get smaller. You might already know that you can enter text, and then it's like, okay, great, we can do that. But if it comes down to the point where you can't get both of those things working at the same time, maybe you can only get one of those things, and it's going to be really hard. If it doesn't really match the core of the thing that you're making, just kill the whole thing. Get rid of it altogether. So think about when you're looking at your product backlog, are there hidden technical dependencies? Are there hidden design dependencies that you aren't aware of right now? Other thing, maybe the feature that you're looking to cut, the unpolished feature that is just dragging down your game right now, has a bunch of dependencies underneath it. It's other things that are in your product backlog item further down depend on it to be complete and in the game. So you could replace it with a scoped down version, you could redesign, or my favorite, just cut everything. Think of it as a tree. You cut the part of the tree, everything falls away, and you just save yourself a ton of work. So the moral is kill things, kill your babies, kill the things that the things that you might like, they might be in there, but aren't really core to the game experience. I'm going to have an example I think I go into right next. Yeah. So thinking about a game you might all know, hopefully. What's core to the game? And all good games have one simple feature at its core. How many people have played BioShock? Yay, cool. So what's the core experience in BioShock? What's that?
Plasmids.
Maybe. That's an item within BioShock. What are you doing? What is the core experience? Yes, shooting, right?
Okay.
All right. Yay, we got here. So core experience is basically what are you doing every 5 seconds within the game, especially for an action game? What is that loop that you're constantly going over and over and over again? BioShock is shooting. But more precisely, BioShock's core value is choosing how and what you shoot, and that's where plasmids come in, right? And other types of weapons. Am I going to shoot with a submachine gun? Am I going to burn with the flamethrower? Am I going to use the plasmid? And actually, what am I going to shoot? Am I going to shoot that Big Daddy or not? Is a huge part of BioShock. And choice becomes choice is a major part of that game. So BioShock's a pretty good example for this because you want to have player choice. You want to have a variety of weapons, a variety of plasmids. But how many of you, when think about your BioShock experience, how many weapons did you generally use when you played the game? Did you tend to choose a core group of weapons you really liked and just not use any of the other ones? Possibly. That's at least how I played. So what would the game be like if we just said, well, you know what? You're going to have a pistol, shotgun, and plasmids, and that's it. Pretty much the same game. You've got still got that choice. You've still got all these different things. There's some systems that are exposed in the game from some of the plasmids that you have that might make things more complex. And actually, so maybe you didn't need all those types of guns and types of gun ammo, which I forget if there is types of gun ammo or not. It's been a while since I played. So just thinking back with Bioshock, what would happen if you removed the ice plasmid, like Wonder Freeze, I think it was called? Like, what are the things that the ice plasmid do? If you can even remember. And so it froze things, it stunned things.
You can walk across water.
So if we got rid of the ice plasmid and you couldn't stun things with the ice plasmid, there were two or three other plasmids that worked for stunning. There was the electroshock that it was able to stun. Actually walking across water, I didn't think about that. That would be hard to do if you didn't have the ice plasmid. But maybe you just don't have that feature in the game. That's one more thing you don't have to worry about is freezing water. And it does, it will, like if what you're going for is like emergence in gameplay, like with a complex system, one of the great things you get out about it is that you've got all these different options and you're going to see how these things like play on each other. In researching this, I realized that, I haven't tried it yet, I'm going to try it when I get home. But I guess in the vending machines, you could freeze the vending machines with the ice plasmid and it makes the fluid in the hacking game go slower, which totally makes fictional sense, and I'm really excited to try it out. But that was a feature they had to actually implement and stick in there and think about for something that maybe most players didn't see. Just I definitely didn't see, and I played the game twice. So there's a lot of redundancy in the system, which allowed them to, if they had to cut a thing, they could cut a thing. They didn't cut any of the plasmids, though, for the most part. They didn't cut any of the weapons, though, because they had a large budget. They had a lot of time. Here's what they did cut. And it's all explained in this article there. I'm going to email you that link. It's pretty good anecdotes of what these features were. The great thing about this thing is when they're talking about all these things they cut, they talk about because it didn't work, because they couldn't get the feedback working. They didn't cut anything because of schedule or time. Largely because Irrational is a company that likes to crunch the people through the problems. But I did find that interesting that they didn't ever talk about time about these things. But like the explanation for the hacking game in Bioshock, there actually was an explanation. They had some systems in place. They didn't get it finished in time, or they just couldn't get the feedback out well enough, so they cut it. The AI, so the splicers were supposed to kill other types of splicers, which then killed other types of splicers. They kind of say it that works that way in the back of the box text for the game, but it doesn't really work that way. Splicers just kill everything that moves, for the most part, and you, because you're always there. There was this barometric pressure puzzle in the game that they just could not figure out a way to get the players to understand how it worked. Funny thing with that one is the code stayed in the game, and they reused the code for some lighting effects that they did later on. So even if you're cutting a feature, it might still be in there in some form, in some matter. You might still want to use that code. So if it helps you just get through it, maybe what you're doing is just setting it aside with the idea that if it wasn't in there, the game would ship okay, it would still be okay. That code can still be locked behind the scenes and not conflicting with anything else. So the reason why you're doing all this cutting is because your game is as good as your worst feature. This is one of my favorite little videos. Where's my mouse? Did anybody play Mass Effect?
Yes.
Does anybody remember the Mako?
Yes.
Oh, come on. Where's my volume?
I think it was fun once.
Are you plugged into cable? Are you plugged into the sound cable then?
It's not plugged in. It's down there.
Oh, yeah. But it's also just... There it is. I don't need the cable. I just need the... I just like the music on the stick. But yeah, as it gets further... This is the worst... I think it looks cool. There is some... It's landing on your back. all the time, just getting in the way. You've got this game where you're this badass science fiction guy, and yet you have this. And this is not the, the core value, I don't think, of Mass Effect. Why are these guys out here just shooting this, and why isn't the Mako really taking much damage from them? You can just mess around. Mass Effect 2, they then remove... So the idea is that you're supposed to get minerals. Mass Effect 2, they remove the driving simulation, and you have this really awful, boring scanning thing where you just have to go to every single planet. I scanned every single planet. I wanted all those minerals. It didn't do me any good afterwards. But, yeah. Don't leave these features in your game. If you have the budget to afford this, great, but you just don't.
It's memorable.
I'm
getting all the free advertising right now.
All right, that's enough of that. So that's just a really basic, just trying to get all of our thoughts down about cutting features, why it's important. Have any questions about that? Has anybody already cut features? I think I heard something's got cut, which is good. Are you going to cut more things, maybe?
Probably.
What kind of things?
I guess that's
things like some of the things you described that just aren't implemented yet but are next up. I'm definitely giving some thought. Budget time for polish. I mean, budget time for polish by just removing things that you have to polish. Cool. And so now let's go ahead and take a quick break and set up for playtesting.
So we're around 2:05, which is about 15 minutes.
Yeah, just be ready to
testing. Be ready for testing.
Content from the following sources is copyright of the respective holders, all rights reserved, excluded from our Creative Commons license. For more information, see ocw.mit.edu/fairuse. Riot Shield Men. Mass Effect. Moronic Mako Driving. March 20th, 2012. YouTube video.